Hello, and welcome to Literally from the North Shore. We continue today with the Bowser Chronicles, written by Two Harbors native Glenn Sandvik and read for us by KTWH volunteer Tom Kohler. Continuing now where Tom left off yesterday.
When colors blazing through the skies burn away darkest night, where shooting stars and ships alike disappear from all sight, that cat saw God in autumn's hues of umbers, golds, and reds, and in the varied shades of white on the lake's winter beds. Could it have been the echoes of God's voice in Bowser's ear, in swooshings of a lake trout's tail to that tug leaping near, in one-note tunes at midnight crooned by seagulls to their young, in howlings of a timber wolf his challenge lakeward flung? Yes, cries to God and cries from God took more than human voice, though Bowser, if the truth be told, would oft as not by choice ponder God's wonders and his love from a safe and warm perch beneath organ pedals of the Swedish Lutheran Church. Now, mention of the Swede Church begs further explanations of cultural diversity amongst the port towns' nations, for Swede-born Lutherans worshipped in a church across the street from where Norwegian brethren would on every Sunday meet, and while they daily lived and worked each other side by side, when Luther's creeds were brought to bear, Norse would not Swede abide. Bowser, that cat of tugboat fame, noted men's clannishness, as Swede or Norse, as Kraut or Pole, many'd like that profess. Pulpit pounders, as had been said, also kept flocks apart. Though mergers, unions did occur to stir a stalwart heart, the cat's most bosom pal of all, the Duke, that mongrel pup, was a prime beneficiary of one such human set-up. The parents of the children who claimed the Duke for their own created for their family a warm, bi-ethnic home. The father was the tug's fireman, a man thoroughly Norse. The mother was of Swedish stock and spoke that tongue, of course. And so their offspring, throughout life, found welcome when they'd call at Terrevik in Norway Lodge and at the Svithud Hall. More such alliances in town tied new genetic knots, as Irish Catholic Lutheran Finn spawned red-haired towhead tots. Those ethno-creed-based smorgasbords could have their ripples, too. Such was the case with Mujaka, that famous fish-head stew. Though Papa Toivo loved the soup Aaron, his wife, would cook, he'd ne'er touch it on Fridays, lest for papist he was took. Now Bowser, as well, loved to eat that full fish Finnish brew. He'd slurp the stuff across dog teeth as fish eyes looked at you. Of such travails and family tales was Two Harbors' life sown, and of such stoic Bowser knew more than he should have known. Yes, unions holy and not so shaped and spiced every soul, while unions of the labor sort in the port played their role. In summer of 1907, perhaps, was aught and eight, miners across the iron range rattled the steel trust's gate. En masse demanded higher pay and safer working sites. They called a strike as one walked out, proclaiming labor's rights. Few thought the strike would last a day, they'd buckle and return, but weeks went by, iron men stuck. Both threats and pleas they spurned. Bowser, that tugboat watch cat, watched the iron strike roll down long Northwood's rails and other trails to grip the small port town. Without the oar, there was no more call for boats or for trains, so work in two harbors stopped too, and townsfolk felt the strains. 2 dozen Lakers, even more, tied up in Agate Bay, sent all but one man home from each to wait a better day. A pensive doldrums, tense yet not, settled on harbor life. Men and women shared strikers' cares, but avoided strike strife. Without paydays for half the town, the whole town soon was poor. To feed and clothe port families, for all became a chore. Bowser observed people unite, share freely what they could. With friends and family, strangers too, advance the common good. Organ echoes and pulpit pleas hymned in the watch cat's mind as he watched people stop and stoop in acts simple yet kind. Now Bowser, if the truth be told, was in awe of all of that, for he'd not thought the human breed as humane as the cat. The year of that first iron strike that Bowser Cat took leave of tug and town, days at a time, his boredom to relieve. He rode the rails of timber trails throughout the Arrowhead, befriended jacks, for sure their cooks in pine dust made his bed. He toured the camps of Alger Smith, of Thomas Nestor, too. That cat watched virgin white pine fall amid woods ballyhoo. He heard the tales at bunkhouse rails of the great woods giant Paul, and of his great ox, the babe, whom that cat loved most of all. Yet pine hillsides and cedar bogs and men and beasts therefrom, while fine for Bowser, were not what made that watch cat's heart hum. Superior, superior, that lake held that cat's soul. Only upon Superior did he feel himself whole. Bowser took passage when and where around the lake he could. Freshwater breezes, fur-filtered, did all his spirits good. The packet boat America was one ship that Cat hailed. From Duluth down to Thunder Bay, the small steam freighter sailed. She circled Isle Royal, too, that ancient copper load. The steamer was a welcome sight when on the waves she rode. She carried mails, hardware and nails, food for shore denizens, and ferried humans as well as pigs and cows and chickens. America called at each port and every fish outpost. It was the one-man fishing shacks Bowser enjoyed the most. Lone fishers passed their catch on board without saying a thing, yet to that cat they'd always toss a meal fit for a king. With that tug moored, that cat might board the Amaranth to be with keepers and their lighthouse cats all round the inland sea. The lighthouse tender Amaranth, which docked at Agate Bay, took Bowser to the Sioux and out to each light on its way. Points Iroquois and Whitefish too, Captain Stannard's wave-washed stone, Jacobsville and Copper Harbor, Devil's Isle, as it shone. Rock Harbor and Menagerie guarding the Royal Isle, yet always for that dog-eared cat two harbors lit his smile. It was aboard the Amaranth Bowser met Russ Tinkham, a towering lighthouse figure who, for lakes men gave a damn, Ralph Russell Tinkham, engineer, U.S. Lighthouse Service. The very mention of his name made lighthouse crews nervous. He designed the construction of the Rock of Ages light. 2 years later at Split Rock built that famous North Shore light. A stern man, yes, demanding, too, for all rules insistent, yet Bowser would recall him for the moose spit incident. A Rock of Ages mason, when a moose stood on the dock, leaned and hissed snooze, which made that moose charge the tender in shock. The poor creature, Bowser could see, was scared out of her mind. The cow crashed round the amaranth. Safe exit could not find. The mate scrambled to get his gun to fill her full of lead. Russ Tinkham handed every man a tin of snuff instead. "Load your jowls, boys," he calmly said. "Take aim at ear or lip." And so brown juice flew at the moose, who was spit off of the ship. Bowser came home to Agate Bay to that tug Edna G when the miners' strike was throttled, a sad event to see. For while railmen and lakes sailors, counting the tugboat's crew, were glad for work, still felt the jerk of what strikers went through. The steel moguls who broke the strike then moved to break the men who'd led strikers by making sure they'd never work again, blacklisting them from mines, from stores, and from every job site, from section gangs, from lumber camps, from the docks, day or night. Bowser marveled at vengeance wrought upon the human breed. He could not, in his feline skull, fathom such acts of greed. That cat knew that even mung dogs, contesting bone or mate, when fights were done, their hearts and minds did not fester with hate. Yet the beat came back to port life. The tug seldom sat still as shipmasters scrambled their holds with iron gold to fill. They challenged weather, challenged fate to keep the oars mill-bound so that more than one boat and crew in danger themselves found. That fall, a half a dozen times, the tug and crew gave aid to ships and sailors who the price of risky sailing paid. The apostles, unholy isles, grabbed hulls when captains tried to cheat the wind or beat the clock along slim tracks inside. On sandy spit or sandstone ledge, few Lakers suffered harm, but every grounding still brought forth anguished cries of alarm. Each time the Edna G went out to pull steel truss stacks free, her crew got some striker's revenge, splitting her salvage fee. The Apostle Shores thereabouts, the Shawamigan Bays, were where Bowser and Edna G spent many fruitful days. Those islands exuded safety to sailors storm-beset, but their shallows were beguiling, spread like a herring net. Ships filled with iron, filled with grain, and lumber hookers, too. Fish scows, packets, and passengers, yachts of the well-to-do, all succumbed to the island's wiles. Their bottoms there took rest. So calls went out to Edna G in two harbors due west. That tug always responded to pleas for her tugging powers and could be about salvage work in just less than 6 hours. That watch cat watched the water lines of vessels bottomed down. For the mate, he'd spot fulcrum points to secure lines and crown. Then Bowser'd signal to the mate a compass point to tow. The Edna G'd put out full steam till the strandling let go. Every freed master cheered that tug and her sharp-eyed watch-cat. At Bayfield taverns set up rounds, let tug crews drain the vat. Lieutenant Bayfield's namesake town to that cat was a treat, for fisher folk and orchard men served morsels oh so sweet. The harvests of Lake Superior, Cisco's herring and trout, the fruits of sun-splashed lake hillsides any taste buds would tout. The Chippewa of the Great Lake, the region's native band, that cat, like other human tribes, studied when close at hand. He surveyed customs, heard sagas spoken in natal tongues. Those lilting, dancing, piercing cries, were they from human lungs? Anishinaabe, Chippewa, call them Ojibwe. What meant these words? Simply, the ones, the native folk would say. Bowser, that watch cat, watched the ones and read their histories. Don't be surprised that he could read. Cats' minds are mysteries. at ritual lodges round the lake, at sugar camps and inns. He observed and absorbed their lore, whispered to the four winds. That cat read William Whipple Warren, a lettered native son, and soaked in Longfellow's verse of how native life begun. The songs of Hiawatha were music to that cat's ears, their creatures, spirit temporal, he knew throughout the years. Wawa the goose and Mang the loon laughed with Bowser at tales of Mishimukwa the great bear and his brunish travails on Gitche Gumee's shining shores where old Nokomis camped, the heirs of Hiawatha with that stoic watch cat tramped. At Grand Portage he heard them speak of news first ever told by boastful Iagu about both beasts and men so bold at the Apostles' Madeline when snows began to blow. He paused a while to read the stone of Great Chief Buffalo. Had he heard Gitche Manitou across that graveyard trod? Perhaps, but in the wind, Bowser perceived the voice of God. Winter altered life's ebb and flow aboard the Edna G. Both crew and watch cats settled in for month's reverie. For when the Lakers quit the lakes, forced off by ice and cold, that tug and cat at Agate Bay watched the season unfold. Moored to her docks by ropes and snows, a glacial countenance showed to the world, yet deep within, coal embers glowed intense. Forever through the winter months, that tugboat's fires low burned, for that always, and oh so slow, her propeller shaft turned. One crewman always manned the tug, watches were stood by all. That way more port town families shared in winter's windfall. The cuddy of the Edna G was a clubroom of sorts, where crew and friends and family relaxed, enjoyed mind sports. Checkers, cribbage, and pinochle were always being played. A hand of smear was often dealt and penny wagers laid. Men wrangled and harangued about politics of the day. Roosevelt's, Teddy and Franklin, Nixon and JFK. Spirits were often raised and warmed against the winter blasts by spirits of the liquid sort raised in one small bar glass. Yet neither brains nor eloquence were tug club requirements, as witness Gustavus Johnson, a man both mute and dense. The shot glass Gus would lift and grin, then stroke that watch cat's fur, content to scratch his flanks and those of Duke, that noble cur. Yes, winter was a time of rest for that tugboat watch cat. On Edna G, around the town, Bowser lolled and grew fat. From Seagog to South Avenue at Kitchens took his ease, snacked Swedish sweetbreads and dined on smoked fish and milk and cheese. At back doors of port restaurants, coffee shops, and bakeries, the cat ate blue plate specials and dainty delicacies. At taverns, halls, and ethnic clubs he sipped fermented fruits, which even on the coldest days warmed drinkers to their boots. In church parlors, dank sacristies, that watch cat would take pause to nurture his spiritual growth, seeking after God's laws. And out of Christian charity and his own sense of right, he'd visit those without friends and with them alone delight. At boarding homes, the town's hotel, Bowser in sparse rooms sat with Norse fishermen, old and young, who, like him, did not chat. As for silence, alone and shared, that cat's prime place to go was Carnegie's brownstone bookroom mid shelves of what men know. Short winter days, long winter nights were given to life's quest, to fathom knowledge for its worth, to serve living things best. Philosophy and history, sciences of all kinds, literature both old and new, revealed great men's minds. He read newspapers, small and large, for events of the days. There often found those queer accounts of men's inhuman ways. Thus, in the winter of 16, that cat learned even more of human cruelty to man as all the world made war. War's fever affected all in town in many different ways. 'Twas true when Kaiser was the foe, and true in latter days. The first, the war to end all wars, marked Tug and Cat for life, though Bowser, unlike Edna G., stayed outside of the strife. From two harbors that watch Cat watched as men took up their arms to fight and die on shell-shocked fields which were French peasants' farms. One young fellow by that cat known as Uncle to the Duke first went up north to join the force for Canada's rebuke. But Uncle Cully got cold feet before the troops went o'er, and he came home quite unannounced to no one, said no more, until one day in Agate Bay three Mounties came to town to question townsfolk, knock on doors, track errant Cully down. The would-be Canuck soldier's mom, born and raised in this land, nonetheless spoke in Swedish tongue no one could understand. So while the Canadians searched the town, Carl in an attic hid. Those Mounties did not get their man, although Uncle Sam did. For Cully joined the army of the grand U.S. of A. and served with valor, bravery, a trooper all the way. At Verdun, earned a Purple Heart and volunteered for more. Thus he entered Mother Russia through Archangel's iced door. Mid Red Revolt he disappeared, was lost, and presumed dead, till 6 months later with three mates at Wonsan raised his head. Now how they reached the China coast was ever a mystery, for Cully and comrades came home to forget war's misery. That first great war, as hinted here, made Cat and Tug ways part. Uncle Sam drafted Edna G., then made Bowser depart. With a new crew and navy blue that Tug sailed down the lakes, was shuffled through Erie's canal, soon felt her first salt rakes. The Edna G., in answer to her patriotic call, gave full steam and was quite prepared for country to give all. She'd have conquered the Atlantic if she'd been asked to. She'd have met the Boche bow to bow, do what she had to do, but that tugboat's wartime duties were what she'd been born for. Towing and pushing ships to berth was her primary chore. The naval yards, Norfolk, VA, became the Tug's home port. Up and down the eastern seaboard, the Edna G.'d consort. Sleek frigates and old battleships, some with severe shell shocks, were nursed by that freshwater Tug to saltwater dry docks. From New York down to Charlestown, barges and scows she towed. Commerce to fuel machines of war was their primary load. Beneath the torch of liberty, the Edna G. would steam, while her spit-polished navy crew would of battling Huns dream. Just once that Tug saw Kaiser's troops and then took them prisoner when nets of cod fishermen snagged a U-boat's propeller. At night upon the ocean's swells did the enemy spy. The U-boat hinted such, but then so did a starry sky. That Tug, like many conscriptees, saw service quite mundane, yet without such droll duties done, patriots died in vain. The forced divorce from Edna G. made Bowser want to die. He lost his anchor, lost his call, he lost his will to try. The cat became a vagabond, a vagrant's more correct. He wandered without aim or goal and without self-respect. His mind's eye and his body's eyes had naught to focus for. His keen dog ears and kindly heart were neither such no more. He gave up food, took up hard drink, let his health go to hell, until that scrawny, tawny cat like carrion did smell. The loyal Duke, his truest friend, and lesser human chums tried all they knew to pull him through his abysmal doldrums. Bowser, thinking their caring deeds acts of rue and pity, spit up furballs, turned up his tail, and left the small port city. That cat sojourned in Knife River, Fish Lumber Rail Hamlet, spent but a week, seemed near a life just trying to forget. The peaceful northern fisher folk, residents of the town, had no forethought when Alger Smith put its rail lake head down. The havoc to be visited by men themselves unto, by sailors, lumberjacks, track gangs, whene'er their jobs were through. Bars, bordellos, and gambling dens usurped laborers' pay. Crimes of passion and crimes of greed were common night and day. Bowser melded to this milieu, its pathos masked his own. Its tense and tawdry callousness drained marrow from each bone. He would have stayed there longer, but the resident felines, deeming him a pox on their breed, drove him out on rail lines. Bowser, once watchful, watch-cat of that tugboat, Edna G., banished from iniquity's dens, still nothing straight could see. He rode the Alger Smith northeast, a flat-car boxcar cat, to London, Lax Lake, Cramer, and each milepost timber camp. Gone to seed, bad as that cat had, no cook with half a head would let Bowser darken his door or in his camp be fed. So, for the first time in his life, double hunger he knew. His sharp cat mind of reason starved, his belly empty too. The woods jacks took no pity on that squalous wastrel lout, mid laughs and hoots with hobnail boots from bunk shacks kicked him out. Not only from the Alger camps, but smaller roads also. Split Rock, Lumber, the Nestor line, that cat was made to go. So Bowser forswore the woods life and tried the iron land. From Ely Cross to Keewatin he sought a better hand. But there again the decent folk shunned that indecent cat. With rabble or with radicals he once more hung his hat. In gin mills and in alleyways, in blind pigs and in dumps, he'd bootlick human reprobates who still gave him his lumps. Round wobbly fires, around range mines, he heard anarchists fuss, denounce the war, the government, and God in heaven cuss, while Bowser would never protest, not even lift a paw, yet rancid odors, noxious looks to him notice would draw. Soon every range town, each cabal, to that cat gave the boot, just thinking such his just deserts, he headed for Duluth.
We've been listening to Tom Kohler's reading of The Bowser Chronicles by Two Harbors native Glenn Sandvik. This was episode 2 of 5, so be sure to tune in again tomorrow for episode 3. Thank you to the author's family and the publisher for permitting us to broadcast this poem. If you miss an episode this week, remember all the episodes are posted on our website, ktwh.org. The Literally from the North Shore page is found in the drop-down menu under Programs at the top of the page.